Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 328. It's roadmap season, essentially a review of the pockets of ADP. We're doing hitting roadmaps on this Thursday evening for you to get you ready for your final draft weekends, a big weekend upcoming, and the final weekend next week as we get inching closer to the regular season. Before we get to that, you can follow me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bluefield, how we doing, my friend?
Couldn't be better, man. Week from Vegas. We've got the players going on. We've got conference tournaments and hoops. One of the best times of the year. So trying to appreciate it while we have it. So I'm doing good. Should be a fun episode tonight. Kind of just recapping, kind of like you were saying, for folks that are drafting this weekend. But basically, also if folks are just kind of catching on to our show or haven't listened to the last couple, kind of a crash course on how we view the 2026 hitter pool by kind of going pocket by pocket all the way through, working from the back to the front. So should be a hopefully entertaining / informative or even both show this evening.
Usually the target is both on this show. Sometimes it's more just the entertaining side of it, but we try to get you both around here. Ryan brings the information. I just make the dad fart jokes over here. And we get through the episodes. But since we're going to hitting roadmaps tonight, next Tuesday evening, pitching roadmap to get you wrapped up there. Yep. No show next Thursday. I'll be airborne. Ryan should be landed by the time that happens. On our way to Vegas, we will do our draft on Friday, maybe do a little auction recap on Friday evening. We'll do our Saturday main event draft podcast. So one podcast for sure. Maybe more. You never know. Maybe two.
We'll see. It always
no promises in Vegas. A lot
plans can go awry when you're down there. So we will see, dude. It's going to be like 98 degrees. Not that we'll be outside very often, but yeah, that's true. But yeah, it literally will be almost pushing 100, which is pretty wild. But
yeah, not too worried about it. We'll be indoors having a great time.
He's 68 in Rio.
We'll also have to remember to have a couple extra waters or Gatorades for when we head out to the concert on Saturday night, because it's supposed to be like 95 on Saturday, so it'll probably still be like 90 when we go to the concert.
Yeah,
that'll be a little war because we'll be.
Is Allegiant indoors?
Yeah, it's a dome. Okay. We're good.
Yeah, we'll be good.
No worries about that, because when I went and saw Metallica in Denver, it was high 80s, humid as hell, thunderstorms. Dude, I couldn't drink water fast enough. Like, it was a concert. I think I had two beers. I'm like, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
This isn't working tonight.
That's not go time at all.
Pounding waters and Gatorades and that thing. It was a rough one. So, but great show. But rough on the old body as you get older. All right. Let's do a little news before we talk roadmaps here. Kind of mentioned it on Tuesday night because it happened a little bit before our show.
Yeah.
Kyle Teal, grade 2 hamstring strain. Going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. As you do the math now, he's got about 2-ish weeks till the season starts, 2.5 weeks. So in a perfect world, he's back by mid-April. Most likely, because he's a catcher, I'm thinking end of April. So we're going to get probably a month of no Kyle Teal. Edgar Caro should catch. What's your thoughts on this one? Because Kyle Teal, I think, went for $2 or $3 in my OLAC last night. I already had two catchers and a util, so I couldn't grab him, but it was very tempting.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, because you did a 15-team auction last night, and I haven't really looked at recent draft boards. So I'm in the back of my head, I'm like, is Kyle Teal draftable? I think so. I think in 15 teamers he is. That $2 to $3 kind of makes sense. I think you can stash there for 3 weeks or a month of the actual season and get away with it. So I don't mind that. I think he's still on the board, but you obviously have to, if you're in an auction, take that third catcher, which is kind of tough to do in a draft. You're still gonna have to start with three catchers, which is also tough to do.
Yep, Edgar Caro will get the run there. He was supposed to DH and back up Kyle Teal. So more Caro. He's like a poor man's Alejandro Kirk. We talked about that last week.
Did Caro go for more than Teal?
I believe he went for like $5 or $6. Yes, he did.
Okay.
People were much more excited about Caro, which I get it. But at the same time, I'm like, I wasn't that excited beforehand because the playing time was sketch. Now you get a month of time, which is great. But I expect Kyle Teal to come back and take his job and not have a whole lot to worry about at that point. Could be totally wrong, but if I'm spending $4 or $5 on a catcher, I'm probably taking a Stevenson or a Jeffers or someone that's actually going. I took Jeffers for $4 last night. Like, those are the moves I'd be making in those drafts.
Agreed. You want to put, you don't want to push Kerr up too much. You are getting a, I don't want to call him a rental, but maybe he is a rental because the playing time will dry up once Kyle Teal returns. So I mean, it'll be some DH and backup catching won't totally dry up, but it won't be enough to be able to count on him.
Now, the question to watch for the next couple of weeks with Caro catching, does this mean Lydon Sosa gets to DH for a month? Do we get Lydon Sosa back in our life for a month?
No, that's a rental. No, that's a rental. And that's
I would be all over like a $2 or $3 Lydon Sosa in a heartbeat.
Right? Because he's first and second base, I want to say. Yes, first and second base eligible. Yep. That's a valuable piece that you could get very cheap. And maybe in a month, if you move on, that's fine. You don't
or if he plays and an injury takes place, he takes someone else's job. Now you got him. Like, there's a lot of levels to, like, right now, Roster Resource hasn't projected the DH. He should DH. I don't see why he wouldn't. And plus, Brooks Baldwin has shoulder inflammation now. So if anybody else was going to compete at that, like, that means Luis Angel Acuna probably has better run of playing time. We're not even talking about that. I'm just throwing it out there. There's less mouths to feed at the moment in Chicago than when we've talked about Lydon Sosa, like, on the second base preview. So definitely a player to keep in mind. I think Sosa was so huge for so many of us last season, and then just watch him get thrown away. Like, he went for $2 last night in the, I'm assuming that's my auction, whatever the last auction was, he went for $2. He's gone for anywhere 3-1, doesn't get drafted in some. I'd imagine we see a lot of $2 and $3 the next couple of days.
Yep, agreed, makes sense.
Anything else on this deal, because there are some moving parts, weirdly enough, when a catcher goes down and somehow there's interest elsewhere.
And not just because we're fabricating the interest. There is legitimate ripple effects to this.
Yes. Welcome to the White Sox is the way I look at this. All right. I try not to laugh at people's injuries. I don't
laugh away. Come on.
I don't wish injuries on anybody. But the news that dropped while I was at T-ball practice tonight, Blake Snell is at least was the terminology used. Like, that stands out even more to me. At least 6 weeks away from making a major league start due to a shoulder injury. 6 weeks. At least 6 weeks, Ryan. He's been off my board anyways. He's usually off my board even when he's quote-unquote healthy. What's this do for you?
Obviously, this isn't great. Blake Snell did throw a bullpen today. So it's not like he is – like, this 6 weeks thing is – because he's basically starting his spring training is kind of what I was reading. And the ramp up will take 6 weeks. Now, there can always be setbacks with any type of ramp up. So it's not like he's actively injured and not throwing. This does seem to be a ramp up thing. And I kind of believe the Dodgers when they say that, because Snell did throw today. I think it was like 15 pitches out of a bullpen. So at least if you're the optimist on Blake Snell, at least you have that. I think Blake Snell is still draftable, assuming it's a 6 week thing, but I think it's just a very tenuous position to be in, especially with the shoulder. You just never know.
Yeah. It's even more of an out for me. He went for like $8 or $9 last night. I'd like, that's money I'd like back right about now. Roki Sasaki is expected to join the rotation. That's been an up and down roller coaster of emotions this spring. Yeah. Roki went for like $4 or $5 last night. Like, as people were all in on that one.
Pitched well his most recent outing. So
his recent outing did go well. Emmett Sheehan gets a little more stability in that rotation, which is a plus for the Emmett Sheehan lovers. He's going around $15 right now. Sorry, I have auctions on the brain. So, do any of those guys get, I guess, more interest for you with the Snell news?
No. I mean, not any more or less than, like, I don't have much interest in Sasaki. That doesn't change. I do have interest in Emmett Sheehan. That doesn't change. What about, I've seen River Ryan. Good name for a river. I've seen River Ryan go late in a few recent drafts. That could be someone, if the Dodgers decide to stick with the six man, or if there's some type of other injury. River Ryan is kind of a forgotten name from, I think we liked him like 2 years ago, that's making a push for the rotation. And I think anytime you've got a Dodger that has skills like River Ryan has, I think he's a pretty, you know, semi-decent pitcher on the Dodgers. I think that's worth a, a late stab. So keep your eyes, ears out for River Ryan and his potential path to the rotation.
Hey, on the bright side, you can't get a promo code, but you can get River. So that's a plus.
Hey, I'd rather have a promo code than my own River. River.
That's an extended joke from the Fantasy Pro Show we run, folks. That's not me just throwing a jab out of left field. that's something else. So if you haven't checked that out, go check that out on the Fantasy Pros YouTube channel. Couple of Milwaukee Brewers pieces and news here as arms are falling at the wayside in Milwaukee. Quinn Priester, we talked about the wrist injury, and he's going to see a specialist for the wrist. He's also got the head, shoulders, knees, and toes that we joked about. He's just hurt everywhere. Well, Quinn Priester is going to start the season on the AL with a nerve issue that is related to a nerve situation in the thoracic outlet syndrome family, a family you don't want to be a part of. Like, that's just a no-go for me. You don't want to be a part of the family where you drink the Kool-Aid when the clock strikes midnight. You don't want to be those kind of – you don't want to be a part of this. Oh. One. So, Quinn Priester, done.
Yeah, like, this is just bizarre. I thought – I took the Brewers at their word. I thought this was just recovery from a wrist, and then all of a sudden last week he's getting an MRI on his elbow and shoulder, and then now it's – nerves in the I didn't even know thoracic outlet had a family. Thought that was he was an orphan, but this takes Quinn Priester off my I don't think Quinn Priester's draftable right now. Because I don't know how high the ceiling is. You're kind of drafting Quinn Priester for some reliable volume, and that reliability and volume both might be out the door right now. So not very in on Quinn Priester. I'm telling you, man, I think we've mentioned three shows in a row, but Kyle Harrison, I'm very interested in the cheap Kyle Harrison.
He was in my queue in the reserves last night. He went early in the reserves.
Okay. Robert Gasser. He's a great reserve pick in 15. So yep.
Robert Gasser is another name to keep an eye on. There are some moving parts in Milwaukee because it's not just Quinn Priester, everybody. Logan Henderson has paused his throwing program due to elbow soreness. We already talked about the elbow soreness issue last week, but they officially shut him down. That wasn't a part of the play last time. So, yeah, this is not great, Ryan. Logan Henderson's off my board as well.
Also, yes, lingering elbow issues that have persisted through March. And so how is that going to get any better by April or May? So maybe it does. I hope it does. But again, this also bolsters the case for Kyle Harrison and Robert Gasser as late picks, speculative picks for the rotation, because those guys could be in the rotation for a while. Like, this isn't
with these injuries. These aren't minor injuries.
Right. Like, this could be a semi prolonged stay in the rotation and guys you may actually be able to count on throughout the year. So, yes, Anthony in the chat, Kyle Harrison season, we will sign off on that.
At least Blake Snell has a time frame. These guys have nothing. They're just in limbo. Speaking of Priester and the nerve situation, we saw pitchers last year dealing Michael King had the nerve. It just never got better. Shane McClanahan nerve ended up having to have surgery to help with that. Like, there's levels to some of these that it feels like Quinn Priester might not pitch this season is what it feels like to me. So,
I mean, they don't know what's wrong with him. So
when it's a nerve, you just literally have to wait and then hope it doesn't re-aggravate. There's so many levels to the nerve situation.
Yeah. My tennis elbow is getting better, by the way, in terms of news.
Speaking of nerves. Well, make sure you use, is it your right or your left arm?
It's the left.
Okay, make sure you use your right arm to take 12-ounce curls in Vegas so we can keep that rehab in play. Speaking of getting on your nerves, Ryan, Bryce Miller shut down his bullpen. We talked about last show, he threw like a 15-pitch bullpen or whatever, 20-pitch bullpen at 80% to kind of get going. Well, he was throwing more of a real bullpen, got shut down because he felt pain in the oblique region. And they say he's fine and still on track, yet he got shut down, which I don't think those two can correlate to me.
Yeah, I think only threw a few pitches, and that is it for Bryce Miller. So, I mean, it was the PRP injection, and first it was the elbow, like the loose bodies missed time last year. Then it was the side this spring, then a PRP, and then still discomfort after that. So I would expect Bryce Miller to be out for quite a while, to the point where I don't even I'm not probably not considering drafting him in Vegas either. So I don't, in terms of like Mariners rotation, my guess is like it'll be some combination of Emerson Hancock or Cooper Criswell. Yeah. I know a lot of folks want like Cade Anderson or who the hell's the other minor league guy? Sloan, I believe.
Sloan, Rhett Sloan or something like that. Yeah.
There's some movement there, but like Cade Anderson literally has never thrown a minor league inning. So I don't see him going straight from LSU to the Mariners. Like even Paul Steens had some time in the minors first.
It'll be Emerson Hancock.
Probably. Like I would say him or Criswell. And honestly, either one, unless it's an awesome home stream, staying away from both.
Yeah, I've covered this team too much and I've written about Emerson Hancock's quote unquote skills too many times. There's not a whole lot of I liked Logan Evans' upside, but he had Tommy John surgery, so that's not happening. Yeah. But like he's a guy at least that there's been signs of skills. Not for Hancock, it hasn't happened. Before we get to our pockets or our roadmap, real quick, we had a question in the chat here. Rhett Thanks says, "What's good, guys? I have an auction draft tomorrow. What's one tip you think is paramount for this season in drafts?"
Ooh. Well, specific, and Rhett, maybe you, I don't know if this is an NFBC auction. You may be in mine. I'm doing an auction.
Hopefully.
9 p.m. Eastern on Friday evening to get ready for Vegas. I would say my biggest tip for an auction is patience. Bubba, you exhibited patience in your auction last night. We were talking before. You waited 3 rounds before you even took a player.
Yep.
And I think you like how your team turned out. So patience. It's a marathon.
Yep. That was the one word I was going to say is patience. I guess if I have to use a different word, game plan, but fluid game plan. Like you have to be able to adjust to it, but have at least some kind of structure when you walk into the Thunderdome before.
Perhaps even a roadmap.
Maybe. Good segue. Let's get to it. Hitter roadmap. This is more for your snake draft, but you can correlate this to what else you need. Yeah. As Papa Bloom says, "Do I need my GPS for this roadmap?" No, Papa Bloom. You just sit back, turn the radio on, and we'll take care of it. It's like driving Miss Daisy with you, my friend. Don't you worry. All right. So why don't you let the listeners know what we're going to be looking at?
Driving Miss Daisy. I do know what that is. But
yes, Morgan Freeman, great driver.
Yes.
All right. What are we looking at tonight?
All right. So this again, we're just going to kind of run through the hitter pool in 50 pick increments. Maybe we'll kind of freestyle it a little bit, naming individual targets, but mostly it's us working from the back of the draft forward. I think the back and the middle rounds of the draft are your most important places where you should be game planning. And I think the targets that you find in the middle round, that should dictate what you take in the early rounds. Because I think in the early rounds, pretty much everyone's good. It's just like, what are you more comfortable with drafting in the middle or the later rounds that you don't need to take in the early rounds? So hopefully tonight's exercise will do that. We're just going to kind of run through the player pool in 50 pick increments. And for those of you watching on YouTube, we have, hopefully it's somewhat readable, depending on how old you are and how good your eyes are. We've got 100 pick increments here on the screen. So we'll kind of flash different boards throughout the draft. But that's the general plan, is to start from 250 to 300 ADP and work our way forward as we find strengths, weaknesses, positions, categories, et cetera, that we like or don't like at different spots in the draft.
Yeah, it's like Ryan says, we always talk about building from the back going forward, so you kind of know what you want to do. It honestly helped me in my auction last night as I was like midway through kind of looking at my team needs, going, okay, like, do I need to be aggressive here to get power because what's left? And like stuff like there's different, you know, points to it. And so as we talk positions, we talk stats, as Ryan said, you know, we got our rare stake reds, we got our Oregon Duck greens, it's going to be red. And as we go through the draft to the front, obviously turns more and more green, which makes a ton of sense. So it's definitely just more about like where we can try to thrive, I guess, as we go through this. If you watch this show and you watch Tuesday's show, and then you can even watch a show I did with Ben about building a roadmap, the whole roadmap, or read Ben's article on the draft kit, you'll be ready to rock and roll. for your final drafts. It's a great tool. Like, I use Ben's auction roadmap to kind of get to where I am. I'm not as sophisticated as he is, but it gets me in the ballpark of what works for me. And if you're doing a real draft, a snake draft, this is a good way to do it. So, Ryan, let's go 250 to 300. Just based on the size of 200 to 250, 250 to 300 looks like a lot more pitching involved here. We're each to give a couple takeaways from each one for the listeners. I'll let you kickstart this one. What do you got?
Yeah, it is kind of wild to see the 250 to 300 group is like just two thirds as long as the 200 to 250. So yeah, that's an instant like, oh, there's not a whole lot of bats being taken in this 250 to 300 group. I think this is the pocket where it matters the most, your league size. So I think in 12 teamers, you're starting to get in the 20th plus type rounds. And realistically, a lot of those guys aren't going to be on your team for all that long throughout the season, unless you hit gold. So in a 12 teamer, I like to kind of speculate on ceiling, speculate on upside here. In a 15 teamer, these are still very valuable picks that are guys that you're going to have to count on. And so in this group, I would much more lean the safety. And I don't know about you, but like looking through a lot of these names on the 250 to 300, I don't see a whole lot of high upside names. No, I see a lot of like boring. And it's a tough pocket for me in 12 teamers. And maybe this is why you want to go. And we'll do our pitching roadmap next week. But I think like in shallower leagues where you're kind of shooting for the moon and trying to speculate on ceiling, you may want to go the pitching side this portion of the draft, because I'm seeing a lot of Willie Castro, Isak Paredes, Alec Bohm, Gleyber Torres, Trent Grisham, Marcus Semien, like Tyler Stevenson. I could go down the list, but there's a lot of boring here. And I think that lends itself better to 15 teamers than it does for 12s.
100%. This is definitely a 15 team region, unless you want to, you know, take your shots on a Josh Lowe and hope he puts it together, a Chase DeLauder. Maybe it's the year he stays healthy, like players like that. Like that's what your point about shooting for upside. Cause you know, if it's a 15 at the end of this pick 300, it's round 20. You still have 10 more rounds to go. Like yeah. you still haven't technically filled out your starting rotation and lineup yet, probably. So, whereas in a 12, you only pick 360 picks in that draft. So, you're getting a lot closer to the end of the road in that one. And so just something to think about it as you're clicking through those. For me, my first point here is if you're punting catcher two, this is the region to jump because it gets even worse after this. But in this region, you got Dylan Dingler, who he had a shoulder issue, but he's supposed to be good to go. I think he's a really good option. Austin Wells, one of the more powerful guys at bad batting average. You got Tyler Stevenson, who maybe one day figures it out again, but I think there's tons of upside there and a decent floor. And then Ryan Jeffers, who there's really, you know, Caratini's in town. Yeah, but they've proven that Jeffers is still at least 120 game catcher, if not 140, even when they have a decent backup. So he'll DH, he'll do whatever. So in this range, you got four catchers that I have zero problem having as my catcher too. And I know for a fact after this, you got Narvaez, Jansen, not Carter Jensen, Danny Jansen. Stuff like that. So if you got a bunch of dollar catchers after this, it's where you're going. So
it's worth the extra. Like you said, you got Ryan Jeffers last night in your auction for like $3-4. It's worth the extra $2 to $3 to pay up and get a Stevenson and Jeffers.
If you're doing dollar catchers, to me, it feels like you're going to be streaming catchers during the season, and that's fine. Just be prepared for that. Whereas these four catchers I've mentioned, unless they get hurt, I don't see how you don't roll with them most of the season. Like, they seem like they're going to be guys that are quite serviceable for you, especially in 15s, but even in a 12. And in 12s, I'm much more inclined to either get two really good catchers early, or you could just almost punt the second catcher in 12s, because there will be options throughout the draft. Like, these guys actually I could see getting dropped at some point in a 12, where in 15s these guys are staples. Like, you are locked and you're loaded and you're rolling with it. So the end of the catcher two tier, especially in 15s.
Another takeaway that I've got here is a batting average. There's not much of it here, and again, right, it's pick 250 to 300. These guys all have holes, have warts, whatever you want to call it. So, like, yeah, the caliber of player obviously isn't what it is earlier in the drafts, but batting average to me really sticks out in terms of, like, this is why I want to build a very good batting average cushion early in drafts. Because, again, these are all color-coded. There's not much Oregon Duck green for batting average in this group. And the ones that are Alec Bohm, are Luis Arraez, are Carlos Correa, Brendan Donovan, Ryan O'Hearn. Common theme among those guys, they don't really do anything else. So, like, you can make up batting average, but you're kind of playing whack-a-mole here because you're not getting any kind of power speed juice from some of these batting average sources, which to me makes former mascot Willie Castro an enticing pick here because he is one of the few. He's projected 258, but also with 13 homers, 15 steals, and plays at three different spots. So I like that. Granted, he is pick number 250, so he's the cream of this crop. But the batting average sticks out to me. It's just you're going to start losing batting average by taking pretty much anyone here that can hit for power or steal bases.
Yep, I agree. Willie was on, got auctioned to my team last night, as a matter of fact. Yeah, so I don't mind that because if you're looking for cheapies, there it is. You're starting to find some rough spots here. And obviously the projections aren't the end all be all, but they're usually pretty decent when it comes to hittings, at least to go off of certain needs. But like to kind of piggyback off what you said, my thing was you got a lot of like 13, 14, 15 plus home run guys. So you got like okay power in this range. But the average, and more importantly to me, the stolen bases are pretty much disappearing in this range. In the previous 50 picks, there's plenty of speed still available, but it's one of those things, like they say you can get speed in on the waiver wire. It's true. You can find it throughout the season. But when we talk about certain categories late in the draft, when you're trying to fill out your roster, speed does start to disappear. Like Castro's projected for 15. Okay. Like Colton Cowser at 12, we could see that going down. If all, you know, we've seen Cowser disappoint. Like I've also believed he could be a 2020 guy if things work right. We've seen both ends.
And could hit 190 and could hit 190 while doing it.
TJ Friedl's in there projected for 12. Evan Carter for 17. Evan Carter's back hasn't held up for 17 game stretches, let alone 17 steals. And then you got Josh Lowe at 22.
You know, Josh Lowe. That's the thing. The two stolen base, at least by projections, the two stolen base guys that stick out here are Evan Carter and Josh Lowe. And yeah, do you want to rely on those guys for speed? No.
So yeah, basically this pocket, to your point from the very beginning of looking at this pocket, it's a really good floor area, especially for 15s. Like, you know, Willie Castro, maybe he's got 12 viability, but, you know, Isak Paredes, there's, you know, Yordan Alvarez has been playing left field almost the last like two out of three games and Houston, and they said they want to play more in the outfield. That would open up DH spots, paying you on the aisle. Like, there's a world where that works, but, you know, Bohm is a boring floor. Gleyber Torres is a very boring floor, but really good for 15s. Like, again, it's like Marcus Semien, so on and so forth. It's not a whole lot of ceiling at all, and it shows based on the projections here. And I can't wait to see what the pitching pocket looks like when we do this next Tuesday, because I have a hunch I'm going to be throwing darts all over the pitching part of this, even if it's like a Kirby Yates or a Robert Stevenson. Like, I'd almost rather take those chances at late saves than – I'm not saying I would for sure. It's just the names off the top of my head when we go through this. So anything else in this pocket or 250 to 300 before we talk about the left side as if you're looking at the screen?
Let's go to 200 to 250. As Jordan in the chat says, it's a lot more promising. So let's see.
Yes, sir. All right. So what's one of your I guess I get to go first this time. Never mind. But just talk.
Whatever. I can go first.
Yeah. Well, we don't need to talk our initial thoughts because we'll talk about it when we talk about our points here. So for me, when looking at picks 200 to 250, obviously a lot more hitters, as we already said. We'll talk statistics in a minute here, but it brings me back to doing our pockets and just our outfield previews in general. We did, three outfield shows, I feel like, when we did them, or at least two.
Yep.
In this pocket, you want to probably get your last outfielder, if not your fourth and fifth outfielders in this range, if you can, because it goes back to the 250 to 300 isn't great unless you're like a Trent Grisham guy or whatever. Lots of toughness there. You get into this range, and you still have some pretty good options in the outfield. Like Addison Barger looks like he might actually get the play. That changes things. Willier Abreu, I'm honestly surprised his ADP is not higher. Same with Dalen Lyle, so on and so forth. There's so many outfielders in this range. You can take two in this pocket and still be okay. Definitely take one. So this is an outfield heavy pocket for me. Like, you need to get at least one, if not two, in this range. So again, the good part about doing this exercise is, okay, you get to 200, 250, I might take three or four hitters here. When then I get to the next 50 picks, we're taking three or four pitchers or whatever. Yeah. This is a pocket, because I like your next point here. It's 100% on par as well. So a couple outfielders, and then what Ryan's got coming up next.
Yeah, I like the and I've talked about kind of waiting and getting a late middle infield because I like some of the options. This is a decent place to do that. Is I think there's a good number of middle infield options that, kind of depending on what you're looking for, there's different types, right? Like there's different different blends on the menu. You've got Ezekiel Tovar, seems pretty solid. You've got JJ Weatherholt and Kevin McGonigal if you want to shoot for the moon and take a risk. You've got Otto Lopez, the bus driver, who's just flat out good. You've got Xander Bogaerts, old boring. You've got Crickets, Colson Montgomery. You've got Luis Garcia. There's just a lot of really solid late middle infield options, and or even late, like if you're again in 15 teamers, like there's always going to be a position that you take last. You take second base last. You can do that here and 100%. Like maybe get by with it. So,
and that's where I was going to add on to what you need is nailed the part is like, yes, it's a great middle infield option. I think you and I like to kind of get two shortstops, but if you can't, this is a good spot for middle infield. But more importantly, if you just say screw second base,
I don't
mind this region at all. And that's what I was going to mention. And you hit it at the end. Like, we already know my infatuation, love for the bus driver. I was kind of bummed I didn't get him last night. That was a whole other story, but that's how auctions operate. But like, even Luis Garcia at this price, don't mind him at all. I'm okay with the platoon at this price. It's just a really, really good pocket. Like, even Jorge Polanco could be interesting. Even Jackson Holley's price has fallen enough, or at least have to look at it, right? Are you still that far out?
Even I would. Yeah, despite my
216, like that's not bad. Like, that's serviceable. Because what if he does hit that upside now?
I should mention at the start. I apologize. Mea culpa already. The ADP that we're looking at is drafts from the last 3 days in 12-team leagues on the NFBC. So this is super fresh ADP. I mean, these are where these guys are going right now. I think it's over 7 or 8 drafts. So I just want to throw that one out there too. Sorry about that.
So yeah, a lot of really good outfielders, a lot of middle infielders, especially second base. Because shortstop, it's like, whatever. I like JJ Weatherholt a lot. He's going to get second base. He should. So that's not bad. Lopez has both. Bogaerts is your dog. You mentioned Crickets. Yeah, it's a loaded region. Big fan of what they have here. So I could foresee myself, if I was doing many more snakes, I know I have one more with you in Vegas Sunday, but I could foresee myself going one or two outfielders here and at least a middle infielder or a second baseman pretty easily, but it's going to be tough because everyone in that league listens to us. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, they listen to the show. I don't know if they actually listen to our advice, but we'll see on Sunday. We'll find out.
We'll find out the hard way. My next point in this range, unlike the last pocket where things kind of fall off quickly and statistically, I at least wanted to point out in this range, you still have a lot of three category players and some 3.5s, if that makes sense. Like you're not getting completely destroyed in a lot of categories. Like you are kind of hitting Platoonsville in certain spots. That affects counting stats, obviously, but as a whole, like there's almost half this range has at least 20 home run projections, if not more. You got some speed, which you're going to talk about in a minute, a lot of batting average guys over 250. So there's three categories. If they got power, you got some runs and RBIs. My point being, there's a decent chunk of actual contributors to your roster in this range. If it's a boring Elliot Ramos, or if it's a potential upside Jordan Beck, there's power in Kerry Carpenter. Our boy Berger is right here. Yeah. Like there's a lot in this range in the power department, because power, like I kind of mentioned the last one, you have 13, 15-ish home run guys. Well, we still have a bunch of 20s in this range. And that adds up a ton if you take like three of them right now instead of waiting until the next pocket. Like that's like 15 plus home runs by the end of the season. That's a tremendous difference. So this is a region that you can still get a bunch of big 3 to 4 category guys that again, really starts drying up quickly after this.
And that kind of leads into my last point here with this group is what I say on the outline, because it was semi insightful. Decent number of speed options that are non-rabbits. So it's not just, and it goes to your same point, like three category type guys. There are stolen base options here that are not just stolen bases or injured guys that can run. It's Otto Lopez. It's Caleb Durbin. It's Xander Bogaerts. Those guys give you, Xander Bogaerts super safe. He can give you other things. Adolis Garcia is projected for 12. Jackson Holliday won't probably hurt you too bad in other categories. So like you can get speed here and you can still not sell yourself behind, again, play that whack-a-mole game. You can avoid doing that by grabbing a hit or two in or three in this 200 to 250 pocket. It is, I think, considerably better than the 250 to 300, like on different levels, like of magnitude, in my opinion. So yeah, I mean, that kind of wraps this group up pretty well as kind of a, both of our points here, where you can still get pretty balanced production across different against power, speed, average, and it's not going to hurt you elsewhere.
A couple questions here. We'll save Woody's till the end of the show. You can do a little quick run through the pockets, but Rhett Hanks has another one here. It says, do you guys tend to go extreme guys, Arise, batting average, Murakami, homers, or do you prefer more balance? Usually speaking for both of us, but we like balance. You can add on to that if you'd like, but I'll take extreme power over average if I have to pick.
Prefer more balance, though I have taken like a Justin Crawford a bunch because I just think there's like breakout potential there. And if there's breakout potential, I don't worry about category. Like I'm just trying to hit on a couple breakouts at this spot too. So, you know, if it's someone who I'm not super, super in on, or I don't think there's like mega breakout potential like I do with Justin Crawford is going at pick 250 here. A lot of people like Jordan Lawler. I don't as much, but you know, again, you could hit that breakout and kind of categories don't matter. But in general, I'm still trying to keep. That's why I have a lot of like Xander Bogaerts. It's just like boring balance type guys and Otto Lopez. I mean, bus driver is boring. Let's be honest. He's a little younger, but he's pretty boring.
He's boring, but he's got upside unlike some of the others. Jordan says Lyle Crawford as your last two outfielders would be solid. Agreed. I'm all in on the Crawford train with you. Ryan's got me excited on that one. And then Rhett says, Boehm is a good option. Love Bubba's pick of Vargas, too. Both have first and third in some of my drafts. Yeah, Boehm is boring, but he's going to hit fourth, hit for average, like 15, 18 homers and a ton of RBIs. So you got that going for you. And Vargas is more of an upside play.
Yep.
All right, let's get to the next pocket. I keep calling them pockets because that's what we're doing. But we're talking 100 to 150, Ryan. 100 to 150 in a... Just like the last one, though, it's
150 to 200, right?
Well, no, I'm saying the whole sheet is 100.
Oh, 100, yeah.
To 200, sorry. So we're going to do 150 to 200 here. A lot of hitters once again, Ryan. So you made the outline, but I get to go first here.
I'll go first. It's your show, man. You just tell me what the hell to do.
No, you go first. Let's switch it up. So what do you got here?
All right. So... Again, just quickly, visually, this is also interesting. I didn't think of this when I put this together, but it is kind of nice to see two groups of 50 side by side. There are a ton more hitters going in 150 to 200 range than there are in the 100 to 150. And so we'll focus on that 100 to 150 group next. I have some theories as to why that 100%. Is. But bats are plentiful in this 150 to 200 range. What was my semi-insightful bullet point on this one? Oh, okay. Nice spot to grab outfield before it starts to dry up. This for me was, and I know you mentioned Bubba in the 200 to 250 group to maybe take a couple outfielders. I'd like to be on my fourth outfielder ideally by pick 200 just because I like this group of outfielders quite a bit. And to kind of just rattle off some outfield names that are going here, Brandon Nimmo, you've got that kind of boring, steady, well-rounded production. The Law Dog, though, I'm a little worried about that guy. I don't think he's even played in spring.
No, he's expected back soon. It's like so there's no official time. It's not great.
That's not great for pick 160. So I'd probably omit Lawrence Butler from this target group. But Stephen Kwan, boring. Dylan Cruz, super high upside. Bretton Doyle, we both love Bretton Doyle, and it seems like he is over that early.
Got him for $8 last night. Very excited about that.
$8?
Yep.
Good Lord.
I think I got three off, two or at least two, if not three outfielders in this pocket last night.
You've got Alec Barrel season. You've got Jack Caglione, Ian Happ. Like, if you want to go on a ceiling for Mike Trout, Brian Reynolds later on. Like, there's just a lot of outfielders that I really like in this group, and so I'd love to grab my outfield 3 and 4 out of this group, or at least my outfielder 4 out of this group. There's a lot of good options here.
Yeah, you better leave here with at least your 3rd. I wouldn't hate a 4th. To your point, like, I think you can make it work in a 15 and take them later. Especially when, and then 12s, I say it only because every Fab show we do, Ryan, what do we say? There's always outfielders.
Yes.
So if we start looking at other positions, like we're helping people with here, it's like, okay, you gotta get kind of maybe fill out your other positions, because that's where I think that's why I might have had 4th and 5th in the next pocket, because the 100 to 150 will have pitchers we love. That's one thing. Like you said, you have an idea there. But this 150 to 200, love the outfielders. Zero problem with it at all. But my first bullet point here is, to me, this is where you want your 3rd baseman, unless you're punting the position. Unless you take one of the elites early, potentially, like your Mikels, your Machados, your J-Rams, if you Austin Riley's early, that's fine. But if you're waiting and don't want to punt the position, this is where you got to get going, because you got your Matt Chapmans of the world. Who's the other guy? Royce Lewis is here. Okamoto, who I absolutely love, is right. The Big Oak is here. And I probably missed one, or maybe not. But like, those are 3 guys I have circled in my draft room. Like, I'd like to leave a draft with all 3 of them. Those would be targets of mine in a snake draft. Doesn't always work out that way. But I feel like after Okamoto, yes, there's other 3rd basemen, but you're swimming upstream at that point. And it becomes a very tricky, like, Alec Bohm is fine, but like, what these guys can do compared to Alec Bohm, to me, is 2 different skill sets. And Alec Bohm is a great floor play. These guys feel like they could at least help you win a league, if that makes sense. So this is, to me, the end of the road for 3rd base, which other positions, like we said, 2nd base, you can wait on. To me, this is where I need to have a 3rd. If I don't have one by now, and it doesn't have to be these 3, but I have to have one by now in the draft.
Yeah. I like that. A couple other position just takeaways here. There are not many 1st basemen here that I like. It's probably why I end up with a lot of Yandy Diaz, who's in this group at 156. I just think he's a good value at the price. But after that, there isn't too much. I guess Wilson Contreras, Sal Stewart.
Yeah.
I know you're a big Sal Stewart guy. Ceiling's there for sure. But yeah, 1st base. And interestingly enough, while there are a lot of catchers going, I don't really like a lot of these catchers at the price.
It's not great.
And so what that means to me, and so some names here, I mean, Alejandro Kirk, Francisco Alvarez, Basayo, Gabriel Moreno. I know Carter Jensen's your guy, but I'm not sold there yet at all. To me, this tells me I definitely want to have a catcher by, and we'll talk about catchers, but want to have a catcher in the top 100, because there's not much in the 100 to 150 group either. So I want to knock that out if I'm doing a draft checklist. But I also, like, I don't really want to take these guys, because I don't know if there's much of a difference between this group that I just rattled off and the Ryan Jeffers, whoever else we just talked about 10 minutes ago that I already forget. Stevenson, there was one other catcher. Like, I don't know, for the massive difference in price, I don't know that the production difference is all that much between those later catchers. So while there are a lot of catchers going here, it's not a bunch of guys that I have ended up drafting on a lot of teams.
Yeah, it's the catcher's department. In theory, this is the end of the catcher 1 tier, is what I was going to. I almost put that bullet point down and I decided to go elsewhere. So I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't want to be the guy that brought up catchers
every single freaking 50.
Obviously, I could. Not like it stood out to me, because there actually are a lot of catchers in this tier, to your point. It's just it's the end of the catcher 1 tier on paper, because in a 12-team league, this is where some of your 12 catchers, 15 for sure. These are top 15, so that's the catcher 1 moniker. But, yes, like Kirk, okay, I'd rather have him as a catcher 2 if you're aggressive. Jansen's fine, but I'd rather have him as a catcher 2, honestly, because he's so volatile. So, to your original point, prefer one of the top 100
options. For me, my catcher 1 drop-off is top 100. I am trying to do that in every draft.
Can you guess who I got last night as my catcher 1?
Carter Jensen.
No, I got him for $18.
Oh, the Goose.
Yep. It was funny too because I went through my rosters just for fun last night, and I pretty much have Goose and or Teal on every single team. So I'm a man of my word.
Great springs from both of them. One of them can't hit this spring, and the other one's injured.
One of them can't walk. So yeah, it's good.
Not worried at all about Agustin Ramirez's spring training stats, by the way.
People. Not one iota. I actually am fine with it because he's been spending the last like week to 2 weeks with the Dominican team. You know what he's probably learning in that locker room? Like zero problems with what's taking place right there. Like he could hit nothing the rest of the way, but just I'm fine. But love it'd be nice if he did though. My other points. We talked about like, you know, statistics falling off. We talked about there was 20 home run bats in the last pocket. This pocket though, for me, there's a lot of 2020 guys still available. So this goes back to this is kind of the end of your five category road. I was talking about 3.5 to 4 category. This is the end of that road. Like you got Swanson. We've seen 2020 from Dansby. McClain, the way he's playing, and Mecco 30-30, according to some, being sarcastic. You go down the road, Dylan Cruz could easily get there. Brenton Doyle, we think, will. So you just keep scrolling down the list. There's at least, 4 or 5 we just ran off. Royce Lewis, the way he stole last year, he could get 2020. So there's a lot of potential upside here and a lot of five-category guys. You got your averages, a lot of power, a lot of 20-plus steal guys. You can mix and match. Like, there's still Chandler Simpson, who we both despise. Xavier Edwards, we despise. Jose Caballero, not a big fan of, but some people like him. There's still a lot of other ceilings in this range. So, I think he still has some serious five-category upside in this section.
One last takeaway. I'll stay on my middle infield shtick. Not many shortstops in this group. Nope. And again, this will become apparent at the end of the show once we get to the front of the draft. This is why I want to pound early shortstops. We've talked about the Dansby Swanson cliff a couple times.
He barely got in this pocket. He almost
exactly.
Got
he's at the top of this pocket at pick 151. After that, it's Xavier Edwards, who you just said we despise. So
that's a strong that. Word. I tell my daughter not to say hate, so I mix up words.
Yeah, it's a little No, that's fine. You know, we're after dark. She's in theory sleeping.
Hopefully for now. Yes.
Yeah. We'll other shortstops: Jose Caballero, Jacob Wilson. Like, there's just not. Like if you don't have a shortstop here and you miss out on Swanson, you are in trouble at shortstop.
Yes. Yeah, you're stuck with Xander Bogaerts or something like that. It was fine for middle, not so fine for starting.
Exactly. So.
All right, let's go pocket 100 to 150 here. And things are getting interesting early. I guess I'll start this one, and it kind of echoes right off of what you said, quickly wrapping up the shortstop one options. And that's the stood out to me because with the Swanson there, in this pocket, so you got Connor Griffin now, which is just insanity. And as you mentioned, it's the last three drafts. Like I'll give a ADP? Stack of papers.
He's on this.
Yeah, he's 140.
No, wow, 140 over the last three.
I'll
days.
Have to, I'll have to go through my stack of papers here. I probably have the shortstop preview in here somewhere, and I'd just be very curious to where he was when we did the shortstop preview compared to where he is now, because that's got to be like at least 100 picks. It feels like he's skyrocketing. So. That doesn't count. Like Willie Adames, who we love or like a lot. Trevor Story, maybe. But my point, and it's not even a lot of shortstops. Again, this is what you will echo down the road here in the next slide. But if you don't get one of the early ones, Jeremy Peña, who I still like. Willie Adames, who I like. I don't hate Trevor Story. I'd rather not draft Trevor Story. This is where the end of the road is. If you didn't get a shortstop, this is the end. And in most drafts, snake drafts, like I usually try to get a Willie Adames, a Peña, or a Swanson as my middle infielder if I can. I want to double up on that fun. But if you miss out on the elites or you choose to go a different route, this is the end of the road for me. You need to have one of these shortstops before you go deeper in this draft.
Connor Griffin was around 200 when we did our shortstop preview in early January.
Those were 15. So, okay, cool.
So quite a rise. Now is at 140. So
he still can't hit the baseball. What are your what's one of your takeaways in this range?
I guess broken record, but I love outfield here as well. So outfield 2 and 3 I could see getting from this group. We've got Michael Harris, and I don't love Michael Harris, but a 2020 with good batting average at pick 100 I think is fine. A lot of folks like Joe Adell. You got there. I like the Dodger duo of Teoscar and Andy Pahis at 130. Jacob Marcy, I can confidently say, is my guy at 141. So just a good spot to grab, again, another outfielder. It's given how much it dries up after pick 200, you need to keep outfield on your mind and try and get four by then. And I think you need to grab one in this group because I think there's some good options here for the outfield.
Yeah, some really good options. And even if you're in non-NFBC leagues, Christian Yelich probably is an outfielder for you. We found that out when we did our Fantrax draft. So
yeah,
like you had him into the mix right here. There is a ton to go off of in this range. So I'm with you. This is where, again, like this is where we differ a little bit. I'm not disagreeing with you, but this is where I definitely get at least my second outfielder if I don't, because I do things obviously differently early on. But I want at least two. Would like to have three through here. I agree with you. Like Jacob Marcy somehow ends up usually being my second, but be a really good third.
Or first. Wasn't there a draft that was your first?
That's happened to me as well. Yes. Yes. That has definitely happened to me as well. So don't mind this range for that as well. I said 20-20 in the last pocket. This is your last 30-30 chance is the way I go at it. Unless guys have a breakout that's obviously on the table, but I say 30-30 because there's not a lot of 30 steal guys left. That's more where I'm going. It's not so much the power. Like Lou Bob's projected for 31. That requires health. Nico Horner's projected for 27, but we know he doesn't have the power. Eugenio Suarez has the 34 home runs, doesn't have the speed. So you have to kind of mix and match. Trevor Story, if he runs super hot, maybe. But this is, if you're going to get a 30-30, this is it. Otherwise it's your top 100 picks. So again, yeah. I'm always targeting 20-20 upside players, potential 30-30s when I'm doing drafts. And this is where that pipe dream quickly dwindles away is where I was going with that.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I don't know if there's even that many 30-30 targets here, but there's at least guys who do 30 home runs or 30 steals. And
so if they run hot, like you have a chance type thing. So this is the last gasp at that. And this is a pocket in the end where I know for a fact we will probably take an outfielder or two, maybe a shortstop. I'll take a couple pitchers. You'll take a pitcher. Pitchers. Like this.
Yeah,
this is a pitching pocket because I can think of names right now off the top of my head that stand out in this range. Gray,
this is where Austin, this is where a lot of closers are going. A lot of solid, like low end SP2s that we like are going. Yep. This is why, again, just looking on the YouTube stream here, this is why this list is 2/3 the length of the 150 to 200 list. It's just, this is a popular spot to grab pitching, and that's okay. I think that's, you know, something to know about the player pool this year.
That's the point of the roadmaps, is knowing when and where to pull the trigger, basically. So what's your last takeaway for this range, if you got one?
I'll go back to batting average. There's not a lot of, like, no one's projected to hit 280 in this entire group from 100 to 150. And there are maybe a handful of guys projected to hit over 270. So you don't have a lot of like true batting average thuds. Actually, Jacob Marcy's projected to have the lowest batting average of anyone in this group by a fair margin. But as we all know, I'm taking the over on Jacob Marcy's 228 batting average.
Prospect projections.
228. What are we? I want some of that stuff.
I think he's at least a 250, 260 guy, maybe even more. He played great. Hey, he's been hitting in the middle of the order, starting center field for Team Italy. So he's getting those espresso shots.
But you need, I mean, in a lot of these leagues, you need mid 250s, 260 batting average as an entire team. And you're already, this is why I mentioned this earlier, but this is why I'm prioritizing batting average early, is it's just hard to make up. You can tread water in this group and still do well in other categories, but it's already very tough to make up batting average if you're behind. If you take like an early Schwarber, Ellie, you know, whatever type low batting average guys at the top, you kind of, if you want, and you can punt batting average, like that's fine. But if you want to try and stay balanced, you are really limiting your options by going low batting average in the early rounds.
Agreed. And it goes back to what we're going to talk about here in a minute, is, and you'll see it obviously in the projections, a lot more 250 plus averages, so on and so forth. But that's why the early approach to talented players is, you know, in pitching it's ratios, in hitting it's the average. Like that's just the boost you get. Like we can find power, we can find speed, so on and so forth, the whole saga there. average, it gets murky. It gets murky quick as we go through these drafts. Woody pulled got a pull here on episode 323, five episodes ago. Our pockets 150 to 200. Connor Griffin was 199.
Five episodes ago. Jesus. Yeah.
It's like 2.5 weeks.
Granted, I think I pulled that ADP. That's probably first half of February ADP, but still.
True.
To go from 200 to 140 in the last 3 days, that's freaking crazy. Wow. Good pull, Woody.
All right. You want to pull up the last sheet for us here as we go 1 through 100. We'll start, obviously, 51 through 100. Ryan, I'll let you have the floor here. What's your takeaway? Is this total picture is a lot more Oregon duck green?
Yeah, like these guys are all we're getting into the territory of these guys are all good. So a lot of call it St. Paddy's Day green in honor of our upcoming holiday here next Tuesday. I'll have to wear green for our next Tuesday show.
Good idea.
Maybe a couple pints before the festivities begin. We'll see. I don't know. What did I put? Oh, catchers. I'm going back to catch. I'm going to be the catcher guy this episode. So I mentioned earlier that there are not, you know, I don't like the catcher options in 150 to 200, even though there are a lot of them. There are a lot of catcher options in 50 to 100, and I like a lot of them. So it starts out with Ben Rice and the Shea Langeliers, William Contreras, Hunter Goodman. All those guys are going between pick 50 and 60. If you go a little bit deeper down, you've got Drake Baldwin and the previously aforementioned Goose, Agustin Ramirez at 79 and 83. And then you've got Salvador Perez, who I think could be like the number three catcher this year. I think Salvador Perez is really damn good going to pick 90. Will Smith at 94. Like, I'd much rather take Perez at the price than Will Smith. 100%. I know you would too. But this is where I want to get catcher. I mean, I just rattled off 6-7 good names. I think they're legitimately good and going in this group. So there we go.
Yeah, no, this is a great range. You don't have to twist my arm on this one. I'm getting one for sure. Two's just tricky if you want to keep building the rest
that's
of your roster.
Tough. Yeah, that's tough to go that far.
That's, again, that's why auctions are fun. You can pull that off. Doesn't bug you. But in the snake draft, I want one for sure. Like, Goose is falling because of the spring performance. But I love the Salvi call. He's a name that the more of the offseason research and discussions and everything we've done and other shows have done really opens my eyes to him between the barrel rates, the pull barrel rates. Like, it's just nonstop with this guy. I've been drafting a lot of underdogs lately, slow drafts, and I have a ton of Salvi. He's so cheap in that, and he's just a beast in that format. I love, big fan of that. I'm glad you pulled him out there. But, yeah, this is a definite catcher range. I would prefer to leave with a catcher here for sure.
Yep.
For me, if you don't get an outfielder in the first 50, double tapping this range isn't the worst thing. So double tap. Almost, if you double tap here, it almost gets you back to your 3-4 in the next pocket. That's why I said double tap, because I know where your brain goes in these. And I also saw the outline. But to me, when you look at this outfield tier, like just like the catching tier we discussed, you know, if Roman Anthony, if that's your jam, sure. But like Jaron Duran, I think is getting underappreciated. Jackson Merrill's having a great spring. Who's to say he can't figure it out? You got Buxton, you got Cody Bellinger, Seiya, who we love, Riley Green, Randy Rosarena, O'Neill Cruz, Springer. Like, it's not a ton of outfielders, but if you go in there and if you get two of these guys with a catcher, I think you're leaving this pocket pretty happy when all things are said and done. Now, there's another position I'm not going to mention to steal the whole thunder here, but something changes quickly here as well. But outfield and catcher are premium targets for me in this range.
Agreed. There's only one second baseman going in this entire range. That's Bryce Turang going at pick 54. He's almost not even in this thing. Yeah. You go back to what we said earlier on the show. It's crazy how thin it is up top. But it kind of goes back to, I mean, this is kind of my strategy at second base. I'm pretty much waiting because I like a lot of the late second base options that we talked about earlier, and only seeing one second baseman in this group is kind of rough. I'm always interested in first baseman in some good first base crop with Rafael Devers, Freddie Freeman, Josh Naylor, and Vinny P. Yep. I'm not as high as Tyler Soderstrom, is going a little bit later, pick 84, but he's also here if you like Tyler Soderstrom. So decent spot to grab a first baseman. But I would still, if I had to pick, I would take a catcher over first base. I also think this is like, I don't know, this is like my shortstop cliff.
That's because, right. That was the position I was joking about when I said there's one other position. I don't want to take all the thunder here.
Okay.
This, yes. CJ Abrams.
I think the cliff is at CJ Abrams.
Yes.
Potentially Perdomo. CJ Abrams going at pick 71, Perdomo at pick 78. But after that, it's Corey Seager, Bo Bichette at ADP 91, 99, respectively. I think there's a massive gap between Betts, Abrams, and Perdomo versus Seager and Bo Bichette. So I am almost requiring myself to grab a shortstop in the first 80 picks of every single draft.
Yep, Perdomo is growing on me as draft season goes along just because of the cliff that falls off that you just mentioned. I have a lot of CJ Abrams. This draft season did not plan on that when we started the show after the season.
He's awesome, man. He's reliable.
I love him. I have zero complaints with him. I just always figured I'd take the guy earlier. And just the way, you know, snakes go, it doesn't always work out. And then I basically push up CJ Abrams probably around to make sure I leave with him because I do like him a lot. I think there's a world where next year we talk about him as a top 50 pick pretty easily. Like, I think he's that good. So, or maybe even higher than that. Maybe that's not doing him justice. But yes, to your point, that's kind of what I joked about a second ago with outfield catcher. And then there's one other position I try to make sure I have taken care of before things get out of hand, and that's the shortstop position. So again, this is why that other pocket 1-150 we mentioned, that's where we get a lot of our pitching. Something for me here is, and you hit on it, it's the end of the top end of first base for me. You have Vinny P.
I stole your thunder then, my bad.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. When we get to these top positions, it's all pretty much whatever it is here. But it's like Vinny P, you mentioned, like, who else? Ben Rice doesn't count. Devers, who I think is actually pretty underappreciated in drafts. Freddie Freeman keeps falling. This is a range where these guys, I think, are much better than their ADPs. It's just someone has to fall, and it feels like first base falls. So it's another spot. Like, you don't have to take him. We've talked about the other pockets later on with your Christian Walkers and your Torkelsons and all those guys. That's fine. If that's the way you want to approach first, that's fine. But these guys at least get you batting average with their power and counting stats. Unlike, you're not getting much batting average later in the draft. So, again, this is my first base cliff as well.
Real quick, I didn't mention this earlier when I talked about second base scarcity with Terang as the only second baseman going in this group. There's only two third basemen. So, and to your point, when you were saying you like third base, like kind of Matt Chapman tier, a pocket or so ago, like this kind of checks out, right? Mikel Garcia and Austin Riley at pick 61 and 63 are your only third baseman available in this entire group. And so, you know, in a 15 team draft, the chances on you landing on one of those two is probably pretty small. So third base is just, third base is my most hated position this year. Just because I like some late second baseman, third base is just like, I don't know. And so there's just there's not many options here at third base either.
Yeah, third base is just really bad, and it sucks because I love J-Ram. It's
brutal, man.
I love J-Ram. I just haven't had the KDS to take J-Ram, basically. When I miss out on J-Ram, I'm just like, well, and like in last night's auction, I was in on Machado, I was in on Riley, but I think drafters, as we get closer to the start of the season, are thinking the same thing you just said, is I need these guys because I don't want to get stuck with the alternative. So they started pricing them up in the draft room. And that's my patience, as we talked about earlier. I did not bite on that one.
Good point by Jordan in the chat, and that's something I did overlook. Bo Bichette will get third base pretty much the first couple weeks of the season. So that is a good point. We will have three third basemen in this group with Bichette going at 99. So, good point.
Anything else in this pocket, or would you like to go to the 1 through 50 tier?
Let's go elite.
Well, let's go elite. So what's your first point on this elite? Because why don't you bring home the position you've been in love with almost, besides catcher, almost every pocket.
Telling you, man, this is where shortstops are plentiful. They're plentiful, they're beautiful, and I want as many as I want, as I can have. So, take that how you want. But I have had plenty of drafts already where I've taken two shortstops in the first three rounds. And I've actually kind of really liked how it's turned out later in the draft. So just a ton of shortstops here. And we've been driving this point home all draft season. It's just because there are a lot of good shortstops doesn't mean it's a deep position because they all go so damn early. It's Bobby Witt at 3, Elliott 8, Gunnar 13, Lindor 28, Trey Turner 28, Neto 33. So that's 7 or 8 shortstops I just rattled off in the first 2 rounds. So they're all really good. They're all 5 categories. And I guess my advice would be don't, like, if you have shortstops at the top of your draft sheet, don't not take a shortstop because you already have one. I think it's fine to have 2 shortstops early in the draft. I've done it, and I've been happy with how it's turned out.
Yep, 100%. It's the old adage I've talked about when I first started doing OCs the year the Guilds won the overall. He took back-to-back first basemans in like round 4 and 5. And it's like, you just take the best roster at the time. You can fill in the positions later. And taking 2 shortstops early, you're getting just 5 category monsters.
Yep.
And it's so, like, it's so, so valuable. And that kind of correlates. I'm not talking shortstops so much, but just we know that this section of the draft should have elite talent, should have elite statistical fantasy goodness. But I want to drive it home. I've talked about it in like every category with, if I'm talking 15 plus, 20, 20, 30, 30, I keep talking power because it's something that's affected every end of the season. I look at my team and power is gone. It's a conversation many people talk about. I need to be more aggressive in power, so on and so forth. And this is the only pocket really outside of maybe a fluky, you know, Riley Green or Kerry Carpenter, or, you know, Taylor Ward runs into some, Joe Adell. This is your only pocket where you're getting 40 plus home run guys. It's it. This is the only one.
Yeah.
And I say 40 home runs, and like you say, sure, like it's obvious, and it is. It's very obvious. But I want to drive the point home because I mentioned, and like we talked about the early pockets, is you had like 13 to 15 home run guys, and you got 20 home runs. But if you get 3 of them, that's 15 plus. That's a big deal. If you get 1, if not 2 40 home run guys here, you are cruising at this point in time. You still got to build your team, but you got to remember, now if you have a 40 home run guy, good chance he's getting you 100 plus RBIs. Good chance. Good chance he's probably scoring close to 100 runs. Like, he's helping you everywhere. So it's common sense. I get it. I just want to drive it home, and that's why there's a ton of 30 home run guys too. But like Caminero, I think, is a dark horse. He's projected for 37, could get to 40. But you got the Rawlings, you got the Schwarbers, you got the Alonzos. So many of these guys that could crush 40, even 50 home runs if they run hot. And those are just game changer plays. So I guess the other reason I bring it up is we talk 5 category guys. Some of those guys aren't 5 category guys. But if you draft accordingly, that power they give you, if you fill the other categories around it, is so valuable. And I think people pass by some of these power bats because they aren't 5 categories. So that's why I wanted to bring them up here.
And the other interesting thing, too, is looking, again, this is all on the same screen, but looking to the right side of our screen here, the 50 through 100, there's only 2 guys projected for 30 home runs.
Yep.
That's Rafael Devers, Austin Riley. It dries up very quick, to your point. And even, yes, there's some 28, 29 projected home run guys. I'm obviously playing with some arbitrary endpoints, but some of those guys are like Byron Buxton, Corey Seager, that are projected at like 28, 29. Are those guys going to stay healthy? So to your point, it's a pretty big power cliff after, you know, from tier 1 to tier 2 here. So wanted to drive that point home as well. I think my last point with this elite group is to kind of go back to my batting average spiel, whatever you want to call it. Again, I think this is where you need to prioritize it. And for me, it makes it tough to take a Jazz Chisholm, a Cal Raleigh, a Kyle Schwarber, all projected to hit less than 240. You can do it. You can make it work, but you got to have a plan for batting average if you do that. So even at Ellie De La Cruz at pick 8, I know he's projected for 260. I don't know if I'm buying that even. So don't overlook getting that batting average cushion with these early guys.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very valid point. It is interesting seeing there are at least a third of this pocket that don't even barely get you 6 stolen bases. So that is pretty telling compared to years. It seems like everyone was just a 15, 20 plus steal guy. But the other thing I wanted to mention is you mentioned this is shortstop. I think you want an outfielder too, if you can, in a 5 outfielder league.
Yeah.
I think that this is where we always make the comments, and it'll come back when we do the pitching roadmap, is we want to do X, Y, and Z, but we got to remember we got to fill out a roster. And if we want, you know, two starting pitchers, we want a closer, we want a catcher, we want you have
the math has to math. Yeah.
Yes. So that's why I want to bring that on my last point is, yes, you want one shortstop for two, preferably two. There's a reason you don't always get two. It's because you're taking an outfielder, or maybe you do get a ace or whatever. The other thing I want to mention, I know I'm taking 2 points here at once, but I meant to mention it on the last one when you talked catchers, but it also it'll correlate next week when we talk pitchers, especially relievers. All draft season, the catcher's market, the relief pitching markets have been elevated through the roof. I want to drive home that we thought this would change. This is 12 teamers for the last 3 days. It has not changed at all. It is not a DC thing. It's not a 15 team thing. This is the world we live in. So if you haven't embraced it yet, you better figure it out.
Yeah. Or do what you did in your auction and take what, Ryan Walker and Kenley Jansen?
For closers, we'll talk about that next week. That's a whole different philosophy, which I'm buying into. But you can't do that in a snake usually.
Yes. Agreed.
Because they go too close together. So. But like your catchers, your relievers, and a snake, you got to go. But yes, in an auction, that's why I said in an auction, I could have two of these catchers you talked about, and then I can get my two cheap. Really, like there's ways to build it there, which is again why I love them so much more than snake drafts. Any other final thoughts as we wrap up the hitting roadmap before we get to some Discord questions?
No, I don't think so. There's some good questions, so I don't want to steal the thunder there.
The thunder, like thunder in the thunder. All right. Our buddy Richie Sands says, I found the NFBC board in the 135 to 160 range. Isn't that great? Who are your favorite targets in that range? We're talking hitting targets, Ryan. 135 to 160. I just pulled it up
on the screen. Look at him looking through his foiling through his papers.
Because I have I only have one computer screen, Ryan. We've established this, so my Discord is blocking you right now. Thank goodness. But who's some of your targets? Jacob Marcy.
Jacob Marcy. At 141. I like Taylor Ward, but Jeremy Pena's decent. But to the point of the question, I don't like Adley. I don't like Nuvolvi Marte. So there's Matt McLean. I think the rise is kind of crazy. So yeah, I agree. It's kind of a tough spot for hitters. There's a few targets I like, but I'll throw Matt Chapman at there 162, even though it's technically not in the range. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of dry.
Yes, it is. And again, this is probably more of a pitching problem than a hitting problem at this point in time. Dustin Anderson says, no question, but compliments on the show graphic tonight. It looks like a video game I had on my Commodore 64 in 1986. So kudos.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not, but I'll take it as such.
Ryan was born in like 1985 or 6 or something. So yeah, probably doesn't even know what you're talking about, Dustin. JM10000 says, at what positions can you wait the longest to take a player and still get a viable full-time starter that produces positive value? I think it's pretty easy for us. Yes.
2B, second base. By far for me.
By far, yes. SMMS79 says, what are you most comfortable with looking for late? Can be a position or a stat? Well, second base, we've already established. Any statistics you don't mind waiting for till late?
Yeah, I think you can get at least the 250 to 300 group. I think you can get pretty boring, stable power. It may cost you elsewhere, but I think you can do that. Whereas like stolen bases that late seemed to me to be pretty rough. At least the players that were projected for the most steals, I'm just not as high on.
Agreed. Fully agree. Like if you want 15 home run guys, they're there. Might be a little blank elsewhere, so don't rely on them for everything, but you can definitely get there. Adam B says, what positions have players late that you can make up specific categories if deficient, i.e. low batting average or stolen bases? Thanks, gents. Why don't you do you have it says late, so let's say 200 to 300 is the way I would pocket that one, just for funsies.
It's very hard to make up steals. I would say in the outfield and middle infield you can make up stolen bases,
yes,
pretty nicely, at least from 200 to 250. It dries up really fast after that, but I think you can do that. I think kind of to tie it back to the previous question, I think like from 200 to 250, if I'm balanced, I want to prioritize stolen bases a little bit more and then pivot over to power for in the 250 to 300 group.
Yeah, if you're talking batting average, I still think Otto Lopez at 260, 270 is fine, but Justin Crawford on paper should be a really good batting average guy. And then boring Alec Bohm, he's going to hit 270, 275. It's just what he does. So
yeah, I mean,
it's what he
does. And hit cleanup somehow. I don't understand how that happens, but it does.
It angers the Phillies fans. It's not just fantasy, folks. That's the funny part. Canton Dog says, think Michael Harris, the outfielder, will have a bounce back season this year. Any other outfielders who could have a nice bounce back this season? I think you're always believing in Michael Harris, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's a bounce back for Michael Harris. Like, he went 2020 pretty much last year, and that's what I'm expecting him to do, even though it's going to be hell getting there. I don't know when he's going to do it. He may steal 20 bases in 1 week and then nothing for the rest of the season, but I think Michael Harris will get there. I think my biggest bounce back outfielder is going to be Brenton Doyle.
Yep. Yep. That's the name.
He's somewhere between 100 and 150, I want to think.
Yeah, he's got it right here on my sheet because you can't pull it up fast enough.
All right, pulled it up, my friend.
I was joking with you because you're making fun of my sheets. I had it right here, 165. I'll ask you one because this is a guy that you like, and it was a down year. Do you think Brian Reynolds bounces back?
Of course. Yeah, good call. As much as Brenton Doyle, perhaps. Yes, absolutely. Going to pick 198, really like Brian Reynolds. Plus, literally the letters OLDS rounds out his last name. So,
that's so fitting. Absolutely ridiculously fitting. Adam Brunchen says, critique the roadmap you guys lay out tonight for NFBC cash leagues versus those with an overall component. Yes, because we are using OC ADP, so there is an overall component, but I don't think it's going to change a ton.
I really don't. And I personally don't draft towards an over, like if there's an overall component, it's not like I'm really changing my draft strategy. I've never been competitive in overall competitions. I think nor have you. No. So I don't know. Maybe we should, but like I have a plan. And then if there's an overall, I don't really veer from it. I'm just trying to get the best guys and piece this puzzle together the best I can and worry about an overall if a bunch of things break right and my guys don't get hurt.
Well, in like 15 team leagues, Ben's talked to me like on our show, Bench with Bubba that he's with me at least once a week on. I've asked him the question because he's always like in the top 10 or top five, like yearly, it feels like in the main event.
Yeah.
And I've asked, and we review his team all the time, and he doesn't really focus on the overall that much. And I don't, and a 15, maybe different than a 12, maybe you take your chances elsewhere and play the fab game. But like you talk to so many of these guys and the draft's a big portion of your team, but there's 27 weeks of fab. Like that changes everything. So there's so many things that, especially if you're in a 12 team, your team looks so different before things are all said and done. So I try to just draft what can get me going out the gate, what's got the best upside in that regard, and then we dance from there. We got a question from Woody earlier. Do you have updated targets and fades in each group? Do you want to do a quick lap or won't be that tough? No.
Sure. Won't be that bad. Yeah,
we'll go backwards. So we'll go 250 to 300. There you go. Perfect. He's on it.
Let's do two targets and 250 to 300. Doesn't make sense to fade those guys.
That's true. So like Slick Willie.
Yep. Castro.
We'll go back and forth.
I'll go Marcus Semien. Bounce back. Good lineup.
Yep.
240, 271 ADP. Got him for
$2 last night. That was freaking glorious. Miguel Vargas. I'm going to keep buying into that. First base, third base. I think there's some serious upside there.
I will say Gleyber Torres to kind of represent the second baseman that I like. He's one going to 255 I like.
Yep. That's what he does. Pencil in his stat line. All right, 2 to 250, target and a fade. I'll let you go first.
Let's do two targets here again. We'll start doing fades in the top 200. I will go I'll go Justin Crawford.
Yeah, youngster. I'll go Jake Berger. If you don't have it killed me last night because I hit first base and corner and field early. I already had util filled. I'm like, a $4 burger sounds really good. Like that's pretty appetizing. So Jake Berger is a guy I like here, especially if you wait on first base or you just want corner infield.
$4 burger always sounds good. I will actually one up your first base pick since I haven't mentioned him yet. I'll go Christian Walker at 208. I actually like him quite a bit more than Jake Berger, and the pick difference is only 12 picks. So Christian Walker is another target for me at first base if you're waiting there or in corner.
And then I feel like it would just be inappropriate of this whole conversation if the bus driver is not mentioned, because I have so many shares of Otto Lopez. Like, that has not changed one iota.
Was nominated a potential mascot in the Discord. We've never named one, but
yeah, I think we'll wait to the end of it. We'll wait to our final show before the season before we figure that one out.
Okay. All right.
And then Jordan Beck on an honorable mention. I talked about him a ton this year, and he's a guy I like as well. All right. 150 to 200. We can do a target and a fade here.
I'll steal your fade. Chandler Simpson. He's going to be my target. Yeah. Okay. You got your fade on Chandler Simpson.
Yeah. Because Doyle would have been my target. So we'll trade that one off.
Yeah. Knifed each other there. That's fine.
Oh, you didn't want to target Jack Caggs?
I can. Target whoever the hell I want to.
I'm also fading Samuel Basayo, if anybody's curious.
Okay. My fade, God, outside of Chandler's biggest fade out there. I will fade Lawrence Butler at 160.
Okay, so you could have my tick Basayo. So, yeah. With Doyle off the board, I actually like a handful of guys in this range. I love the ADP keeps climbing, but actually, no, I'll keep him. Dansby Swanson, I have a lot of shares of him, so I'll stick to where I'm at. But
I do need to throw Bryson Stott out there, 190. Love Bryson Stott, target.
He's solid. I was gonna say the Big Oak. I know the ADP keeps climbing, but I'd love that skill set. Like, love his skill set. Now he actually has a job, which helps as well.
Yep.
100 to 150.
All right, 100 to 150. My fade will be Luke Kuechel at second base, pick 121.
It's a good fade. Mine's Connor Griffin at 140.
Sure.
Who's your target?
Target Jacob Marcy, 141.
Did not see that one coming.
Not at all.
For me, I don't really like this range much at all.
There's not many to choose from, man. Again, no. This is why we're going pitcher here between 100 to 150.
A guy outside of Jacob Marcy, like, I love Jeremy Pena. I'm still going to say Jeremy Pena, even though he's got the finger injury, shouldn't miss too much time, so. I'll go Jeremy Pena right there. All right. Final countdown. 50 to 100.
All right. Target here, I'll say Sal Perez. I picked 89.
That's a great target. I'll say CJ Abrams.
Fade is Corey Seager. 91.
Too freaking easy. I guess I should have said, my target, if I was on brand, should have been Goose. But I'd have fine. Tons of
We know you love the Goose.
My fade, besides the name you just mentioned, I think I'll say O'Neal Cruz, but I should probably be more open-minded to that one.
That's fine. No,
fine. One 250.
Fade, I hate to say it. Cal Raleigh, 20.
At that price point, I don't blame you at all. I love Cal Raleigh, but for a catcher at that price point, when so much can go wrong, not for me. Fade for me would be my usual fade. It's Ellie De La Cruz. One day it'll bite me in the ass, but I'll keep doing it.
My other fade is James Wood. If I'm doing two fades in this group, James Wood would pick 34. No way.
My target. There's all. They're all.
Yeah, I mean they're kind of all targets. That's silly. Give another fade. Give another early fade.
Another early fade will be
more valuable.
Will be Nick Kurtz.
There you go. I can sign off on that. Low batting average potential, even though projected 259 could be lower.
Yes, indeed. Real quick, we have a couple questions here. Birch McCollum says, if Paredes had a permanent spot, where would you rank him? I assume higher, much higher, much higher.
Yeah, I don't know where he's going. I can't find him. So.
He was in like the 200, I think, page, if I remember correctly. I'm looking at other
251 Isak Paredes. Yeah. So 251, like, yeah, for sure. Like, I think Isak Paredes, a permanent job, is a top 200 pick.
Yeah. He's like, if Noelvi Marte is at 148, Okamoto's at 200, he's probably like in the 180 to 200 range. I know it's like Royce Lewis is 189, probably close to Royce.
Yeah. And I'd probably consider Isak Paredes over those guys, to be honest. But the truth is, he doesn't have a job. Like, that's the problem. He does for maybe a couple of weeks, but it's not worth jumping him a bunch of picks.
Yep, agreed. Adam says, you might be able to grab a bunch of Stanton home runs early season before the inevitable. I agree. I've been preaching that every now and again. So, yeah, there you go. That does it, Ryan. another good episode in the books. I think that would actually help. That had a lot going on.
Yeah, hopefully that helped you guys to kind of get a feel for this all and crammed in one episode. Had like 40 to 50 of you here for us at 1:30 Eastern time. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for the lively chat. Didn't even need Uncle Ted to make it lively. It was lively without him.
Stick to the RotoWire show, Ted.
Appreciate it, fellas. And Uncle Ted.
But we'll wrap it up there. We'll be back with you guys Tuesday evening to talk pitching roadmaps and pockets of 50 as well. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm BD Entrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 328. Catch you all next time.